We are going to open the lines for Paul Eno. So if you have a question, by all means, grab a phone, come through a portal, and join us. We're talking about the paranormal, sort of generally about the paranormal, but this man does have a deeper understanding than most people I've talked to of it. There's simply no question about it. So the first question that we had on our little sheet was dead on the money. A very deep understanding of what this is all about, in my opinion, it coincides very much with what I believe. And so maybe that's why I think that, but it certainly is true. All these years of looking into it, and this sounds just about right. Paul Eno, back in a moment. Once again, Paul Eno. Paul, welcome back.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. I do want to ask this. Have you ever run into an entity or parasite, if you will, or whatever you want to call them, that was without question pure evil?
That's a difficult question because it's very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there really isn't any such thing as objectivity. I would have to say probably yes.
Oh?
Would you say pure evil? I'm not entirely sure what you mean, but one, I interpret that as hostility, you have desire to harm.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I have never seen a desire to kill because we're their food source, right? But the nastiest of the nastiest, yes, I believe I have seen what can really undeniably be called evil in our sense of the word. I think that there was one in particular, what I call this ghost in the checkered shirt from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
This one was a case where this entity was pretending to be the deceased father of this family. And there were four children and a poor woman who was trying to handle these things and didn't have enough money, and everything went wrong for these people, and this seemed to be the father. And what really made me suspicious was that he would demand certain things in a way. In other words, they attempted to move the father's chair out of the living room. The thing would literally pick the chair up, transport it down the hallway in front of everybody, and put it right back where it was. And I would see this man in a checkered shirt running behind the garage, say, when I was outside, or just ducking around a corner. And I would never see his face, but I would always see this checkered shirt, and I would get this incredible feeling of just unbelievable hostility, certainly toward me. And it's funny, just as an aside, there are certain, I don't know if I can call them archetypes, but there are certain patterns of figures who are seen in parasite cases very often. There's the little girl with flowers in her hair. And when I say archetype, I mean, you know, universal appearances in all cultures.
Right.
Little girl with flowers in her hair, and a man, in our culture anyway, a man in a checkered shirt. Really strange, but that's how a lot of these things seem to appear. So what we did here was what I began to learn was the only way was to bring in positive energy. The family pull together, try and connect with the real father. And interestingly, when I made it known, I literally spoke this in the living room of the house. I did not believe that this was the father of this family. Everything changed. It got very hostile, but it didn't pretend to be the father anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The family didn't believe it either. So again, things are never what they appear to be. And when you have this negativity from what's supposed to be a loved one, that's a dead giveaway to me that it's a parasite. But that was a real, real nasty one.
Yeah, I've said things are just not what they seem.
They're not.
Yeah. There are people who... I when I was younger, and perhaps not so wise, Paul, I played with a Ouija board. I had an experience that I still will not talk about. It was not good. And I wonder if you have any advice for people who toy with these things as a child would play with a game, opening doors that they're, well, in other words, when you open your front door in a big city, you have no idea what's going to walk through. And is it very much different?
Not at all. It's very well put. My advice for people with that is one word, don't.
Yeah.
I myself had an experience as maybe similar to yours when I was younger and foolish. A friend of mine, back in Connecticut, and I were grade school, and he got one as a present. I've been after Milton Bradley for years to take the bloody things off the market, and they just don't take me seriously. And we began to play with this thing, and finally we asked when we would die. And it said that he would die in 1983. And he did. He died in a diving accident. Mm-hmm. Now, how can this thing predict this stuff? Well, first of all, these are entities who are very aware of all the different possibilities, probabilities in the multiverse, all the different bubbles as we've been talking about. And I think that when they're accurate, they pick the right word, the right bubble. And this guy, as I say, he died in a diving accident. Now, it's said that I have a considerable number of years to go, I guess, and people believe in these things. And I have an elderly cousin in Florida who just, she's in her 90s, and she just talks to all her friends on these Ouija boards. And I tell you, not talking to your friends. You're punching holes in space-time, and who knows what's going to come through and grab.
It's not the Ouija board per se anyway, Paul. It's the intent of the person or persons using it. In other words, you're actually asking to open a door. You're asking to speak to the dead or the parasites or the whatever they are. They're all words. You want to speak to them. You want to open the door. And, you know, so you could do it with anything. You could take this tape case in front of me and imagine that it will open doors and start playing with it and probably achieve the same thing. So I don't think it's Milton Bradley's board. I think it's the intent of those using it.
Well, actually, I think it's the board. again, I can't put my finger on why, but there's something about Ouija boards and seances that just light the fuse. Again, I think if these things try to reach out to you, you know, they're doing it. You remember the old thing from the Dracula story, you know, enter of your own free will, you know.
Yes.
You have to go into the Dracula's castle of your own free will. He can't grab you and pull you in there. It's almost, it just strikes me as almost the same thing. You're asking for it. You're asking for trouble.
That's right.
And people ask me about possession very often, you know, the most extreme parasite sort of phenomenon that you can get, even beyond poltergeist. And I've dealt with possession cases before, not for a long time, fortunately, but I have. I have been convinced that when that occurs, it has to be voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
You have to let this thing gain a certain amount of control over you, even over your personality, but it's got to be voluntary. And why would anybody do that? Because they, for one thing, as this little girl in this Bridgeport house did in 74, she loved the attention she was getting. And the very idea that, you know, cosmic forces could work through me and I'm getting this attention and otherwise I'd be a nobody,
sure,
that's a dangerous feeling.
Well, again, though, I don't think it's a board. I think that if I could make you believe, let's say I had a black box. Black is good. A black box. And I could convince you that if you placed your hand on this black box and you called for a spirit, that it would work. If I could convince you of that, Paul.
Yeah.
The black box would work every bit as well as the Ouija board. The Ouija board works because people believe it.
Maybe it's because it's 4 o'clock in the morning here. I didn't quite get what you meant.
That's
but, yeah,
what I meant.
No, I agree with that 100%. It is the people. On the opposite end of the coin there, too, I often will approach people. And today, especially with the multitude of religious beliefs, you have to take people where they are in a case. They're having problems. If they're Buddhists, say, you can't really go running in with holy water and crosses and Bibles, right? Because what the weapons they use have to connect with them.
They have to believe it.
Yeah, exactly. You have to believe it. Belief and love are the most powerful forces there are. I've seen teddy bears work for children. Literally, you know, keep the parasites away because they connect with these things and they believe it and it gives them comfort. And what are they doing? The teddy bear has no power. They are evoking their own power to control their own lives.
Well, I think love is the biggest and most powerful force, actually.
It sure is. You know,
it's a good thing for us.
It's very true. And that's because, as I say, we used to go charging in with clergy and holy water and all this stuff, and it wouldn't always work. I said, well, how come it doesn't work? My belief system says it should work. Uh-huh. But what always works is people coming together. If a family, but it's all about family, you know, and this is what we got to get away from is the idea that we can do it ourselves. We need each other. And when families come together, and whether it be maybe just your friends, even if you have nobody, you've always got somebody, whether it be your ancestors who love you or whatever, you come together with them, you hold hands, you stand in solidarity, nothing can touch you. Not the parasite, not anything bad. And that is the ultimate message that I always like to leave people with. That you are never alone, and you are always loved.
All right, let's go to the phones, I promise. Karen in Sacramento, you're on with Paulino.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. My name is Karen from Sacramento.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. I called to tell Mr. Enos that his...
That's Eno. It's just E-N-O, hon.
Big pardon?
It's Eno, E-N-O.
Oh, Eno. One spelled backwards.
Okay. His statement about hell being a neutral place is not correct, because in the Bible, Jesus says that hell or Gehenna was a place where the fire was never quenched and the worm never died, and that there would be a wailing and gnashing of teeth. It doesn't sound like a very neutral place, though he himself said that.
Well, I actually didn't say it was neutral. I don't know if I want us to get into a theological discussion here, but you have to be aware that that particular passage is mistranslated. And I was not prepared to talk about that right now, but I can some future date if anybody wants to hear it. But the problem with the English translations is that they are really, really lousy. The problem with various scriptures is that they were handed down hand copy after hand copy. We have Bible documents where the scribe, who was writing it down by hand, was criticizing the scribe before him for changing the text, and we don't know what the text was. So you have to rely, as much as this is a dirty word to American evangelicals, you have to rely on holy tradition. You just have to, or else chaos will result. And the chaos comes, an example, there are 30,000 Christian sects, all of which say they believe in the Bible, and there are 30,000. If you're going to tell me that people interpret the Bible in the proper way and they still have 30,000 sects, I'm just not going to believe that.
Paul, do you believe that reincarnation was at one point in the Bible?
Well, it wasn't really in the Bible. There were many, many, after Jesus walked the earth, there were many, many Christian sects, many, many belief systems, and pretty much conquered all the others, and his version of it kind of came to the fore. The earliest Gospels and the Gospel of Mark being the oldest, but the epistles of Paul were written before the Gospels were. So it's pretty much for sure. And the problem was that Paul had already influenced all the beliefs of the church before this occurred. And there were a number of Christian sects that believed in reincarnation. Judaism, in part of its history and in part of its one or more of its approaches to its own faith, believes in reincarnation to this day, really. Origen, the father of the church, who was later considered a heretic, believes in reincarnation. So, yeah, it's part of the tradition. I don't personally believe in it, because when you don't have a past and a future, in an objective sense, you can't have past lives. What you have, of course, as we discussed, are parallel lives, which I suppose is six and one half dozen of the other.
Well, Paul, what is it you think that so many, I've interviewed over the years, so many people who have hypnotized others and have taken them back to birth and then into prior lives. Now, what are these people running into?
Funny you should bring that up, because I love to talk to regression therapists.
Okay.
And I always ask them, do you ever encounter people who will describe worlds that you don't recognize? And they'll say, funny you should ask.
Yes.
One in Vermont said, well, gee, I had somebody last week who told me it was the year 2148. And so if hypnotism is legitimate, there is a certain question about that.
Yeah.
And if it does what we think it does, then people describing future lives as well as past lives give credence to the idea of the multiverse, because the future is there just like the past is.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because a couple of these gentlemen that I've interviewed have exactly said that they've run into so many people with not just past but future lives as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it puts arrows in our quantum quiver, so to speak.
And Jason,
I ask these people, and then so you've got lives that are being lived simultaneously, and a lot of regression therapists are accepting that concept. They may not understand it, but they're accepting it.
All right. Jason in South Carolina, you're on with Paulino.
Yes, it is a great pleasure to finally get to speak to you, Art Bell, and Mr. Eno.
Thank you.
I was going to ask more in reference to what you were discussing earlier with hell. The last caller basically took that part of my question away. One thing that I kind of wanted to touch base on and maybe clarify, particularly for you, Art Bell, you spoke about how you have a hard time believing that if someone does something terribly bad, like child molestation or murder or something like that, that they can just simply say, please forgive me, and then they're forgiven. And
that's right. That's right. Even if it's genuine, in other words, even if they feel genuine regret for what they did.
Right.
I mean, somehow the universe, it seems to me, equals things out. And something as horrible as child molestation is not just taken away by saying, gee, I'm sorry, I did it.
And you're exactly right. You're exactly right. From listening to you speak, Mr. Eno, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'll post this more as a question, but it sounds like you don't put much faith in the English translation of the Bible. So I won't use this as a Bible reference, but as my own personal experience, and it's something that I know to be a fact because I used to not have any faith at all. I hadn't felt anything, didn't say anything. You know, I'd spoken words before, but still didn't feel anything. And you're exactly right when you say you don't believe that you can merely ask for forgiveness and all is well. What makes it all well? You know, your ticket into heaven is not only ask for forgiveness, but you put your full faith in Jesus Christ and then repent. A lot of people, even Christians, miss this. When I say the word repent, that means to physically and spiritually repent of your sin, turn away, turn to Christ. Put your full faith and trust and heart into him, and he will make you a new person as he did me. I mean, I'm telling you, and it was almost overnight. I became a totally different person. I didn't have the same interest. I no longer wanted to do things that hurt my family, that hurt me. And I mean, it's just a miraculous thing that, you know.
All right, Jason, I'm not saying that, if after you've done something, you can't mitigate, what the universe is going to have you judge. I think you kind of have to judge yourself. These are my own personal beliefs, I guess, but I think in the end you judge yourself. And so I'm not saying it can't be mitigated by what you do later in your life. I'm just saying that somewhere the universe is going to dish out justice for a severe wrong. Now, Paul?
Well, I think that discovering the H word, humility, in the face of your beliefs, in the face of Jesus or the Bible or whatever your belief system is the key. Because I think the measure of intelligence is knowing how much you don't know. And all the theology I studied over the years, all theology ends in silence. And you stand before God naked. And I think it's simply realizing that in humility that your answer begins. And here we are in silence.
Yeah, and here we are in silence. Well, it provokes a lot of thought, Paul. It really does. And I can't remember the name of the movie. I really can't. But there was a movie I once saw in which, at the very end, a woman was required to judge herself. And she did. And she ended up not in hell, but in a kind of a purgatory. She didn't go to heaven. And I don't know why that had so much impact on me, but it did. At any rate, Paul, hold on. We've got a board full of people who would like to talk to you. Paul Eno is my guest. This has been packed full of really good stuff tonight. I'm Art Bell. Paul Eno has, in my opinion, a better grasp of all of this paranormal activity and the possible reason for it. And certainly his encounters with it than many, many people I've talked to. Fascinating guy. So if you have a question for Paul, we're going to lean heavily on the phones this coming half hour. Be right back. Well, all right. Once again, Paul Eno. Paul, if you're ready, a lot of people would like to speak to you.
Let's go.
All right. Let's do it. Let's begin with Susanna in California. You're on with Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Susanna in Grass Valley.
Right.
Hi, Susanna.
I really love the show. Art, this is a blessing. This is the first time I've talked with you. I started listening to you about 10 years ago. A truck driver friend turned me on to you. And I've been on with George twice now since April.
Okay.
I really applaud you, Paul, for being a minister who didn't settle for being a sheeple, so to speak. You kept opening yourself up and using the gifts God has given you, and that's just awesome.
Well, thank you. Actually, I was never ordained. Maybe the church and I both had a lucky escape. I don't know, but I do honor my education and certainly honor God.
Thank you for the clarification. I am a minister and a medium, and you've just been sort of hopping from one subject to another that's been a part of my life for years, and from time travel to depossessions and parasites to Ouija board use to the afterlife, and I was trying to pose a question, and recently, actually 2 days after my first chat with George on the Coast to Coast about an alien abduction situation I had, my mom died, and following her passage and not really believing any of my psychic friends who kept telling me, oh, she's in a better place, I decided to see for myself, being a clairvoyant, and was able to follow her. And what I wanted to ask is, have you ever followed a loved one to see where they ended up?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I say, they kind of follow me. I mentioned the unborn son who has come as a guardian. I do find very often that there is a misconception sometimes among people who believe that once you have passed from this body into whatever we were describing, that you know everything. All right, I don't think that's true. I've met many people who have passed here but are alive in many other worlds, and the ones in which I have seen them, they are very confused or terrified. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes they're in worlds where they're very much enlightened and can help others and help their families. So I think that I have not followed my own loved ones, but they are there, and I think all of us, frankly, don't necessarily need mediums, and I think the best mediums will tell people they are their own best mediums. And it's simply a matter of quieting the soul, quieting the heart, and just holding hands and being in touch, because this unity of the multiverse is its ultimate message. And I don't know if you get what I'm saying here, but I think it's a lot simpler than we often think it is. And we're already in touch. We're already should be holding hands. And that love is the greatest bond in the universe. It really is. So, I don't really follow them. They kind of follow. We follow each other.
Well, is it your view that when a person passes for some period of time, they are closer to you than they are after a period of time passes?
Well, I've wondered that, because very often people will say that they are in touch with their loved ones are still there, they're helping them out.
Yes.
Others seem to completely disappear. I think that's because we each, as I say, make our own bed in the multiverse. We have to go on with our tasks, so to speak. I think that when you have someone like Mother Teresa, or someone who is like little Peter's grandfather, where there's nothing but love, they will be there more readily, more frequently than some. And I think that when the person is not there, I think to try and reach them or to try and connect with anything but their presence in the multiverse, and to expect to have chatty conversations and to have them helping you and doing this sort of thing, well, that might be a little bit of a reach. You have to understand, I think, that people move on, and we ourselves move on, and not everybody is in the same state that they are enlightened and to the point where they can help their ancestors or rather their descendants and this sort of thing.
Okay.
It's a matter of being patient.
All right. George in California, you're on with Paulino.
Hi, Art and Paul.
Hello.
As you were talking about your experience with the Ouija board, I was sitting there listening, thinking that you're asking a question of someone or something and getting an answer. I went through remote viewing training with Ed Dames, and it's the same situation. You're asking a question of what he refers to as the collective unconscious, and you're getting an answer. What made me sit bolt upright was that the Ouija board predicted exactly the year, 1983, that your friend would die. Remote viewers have a huge difficulty with numbers, which disappoints me greatly that I'm a math teacher and the collective unconscious doesn't seem to be able to handle numbers. But anyway, do you have any idea what remote viewers access?
Yeah, good question. What is it, Paul, do you think that they are accessing?
Well, I think that what they're accessing is other bubble universes, as we've described. I think that pretty much explains all psychic and mediumistic phenomena. I think the individual person and their individual gifts will determine precisely what they access. One thing that bothers me about Ouija boards and seances and things is that people always assume that what they're told is true.
Mm.
I don't believe half the people I meet on the street, you know, and it's a matter of discernment and common sense. So I think what remote viewers are accessing is where they already are in a different place.
Okay.
You know, it's like deja, what is deja vu? I think deja vu is the similar thing. You have the experience of having been there before, of having done this before, having spoken with this person before. You have that feeling because you have. Not only have you, but you are at that very instant in a subconscious life. Again, once you get your mind around this stuff, it really starts to ring true. But it's a matter of getting your mind around it first, because this is not the world that we see with our five senses.
And that's not easy. Mike in Green Bay, Wisconsin, you're on with Paulino.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hello. How's it going? Long-time listener, first-time caller. I actually had a question for you, Paul.
Shoot.
Sorry, I think somebody's calling me on the other line. It's kind of become apparent to me. I've a few areas, just kind of two different houses, and you know, the one thing that really kind of struck me was the places that really, you know, I felt really, like, out of place, you know, it's had that eerie little essence to it, kind of always seemed to be like the houses that kind of had a lot of clutter to them or a lot of stuff. I was wondering if you've ever noticed anything, like, in connection to these parasites that you described, have you ever noticed, like, a connection between the amount of stuff in the buildings and the parasites?
Well, that's an interesting question. In other words, very cluttered houses, Paul.
Well, my wife might refer you to my office and this sort of thing. But it's interesting that you should say that, because objects, physical objects, sometimes can affect paranormal phenomena. I've had I had a major case only a few years ago where somebody moved a table out of their basement and all hell broke loose, so to speak. Actually, it was a parasite situation that just got worse and worse. And I understand, well, gee, you know, what on earth is that? What causes that? So I think that when you have a lot of clutter, and I'm not saying that it's really true, but I think there may be something to it. When you have a lot of clutter or physical objects, what's happening? Every physical object, as any physicist will tell you, has a little gravitational field around it. These things can bend space and time in the sense that Einstein talked about it. When you have an object that someone has loved and been close to and cared for and taken care of and carried through their lives, it is part of their consciousness wave, I guess, to use the quantum term. It is part of them. And when you have moved something, or when you are in an area where there's a lot of clutter, I mean, it is possible that these waves will interact with yours in a negative way, in a sense that is not quite in harmony, and you might possibly have bad feelings or feelings of not belonging, because so many things there belong to one person and not to you. It's something else you have to get your mind around, but I think that's a sensible explanation that I've seen when people have expressed the feelings you have.
Okay, here's one for you, Paul. Many ghost hauntings have been reported as, kind of like endless tape loops with the spirit or the entity or the ghost doing the same thing again and again and again, frequently in the same place, you know, like in a house or in the place where an untimely death occurred, that sort of thing. And just sort of an endless tape loop, almost like it's not in contemporary time at all. It's just sort of an echo of what was.
Exactly. It's often thought that these things are recorded, as it were, on the environment and simply play over and over again. Well, I don't accept that. I think what's happening is that it's like throwing a rock into a pond, as we said before. See the ripples. They go out, they go all the way to the edge of the pond. Well, the pond is like the multiverse. When a terrible event, or even sometimes a happy event takes place, these things send out energy through space-time, through the multiverse. You drop the rock in the pond, so to speak, when you die or kill somebody or have a wonderful experience or something really, really emotional happens. And those waves go out. And the waves are the same size. They keep happening for quite a period of time.
Uh-huh.
And if you are attuned to it and you're in the right place at the right time, you keep seeing it. You keep hearing it. I had a case in New Hampshire, very interesting old house, and you would hear at the same time every night something drop.
Yes.
And another sound after that, and it was the same sound again and again and again. I think it was just the whatever happened there, whether someone keeled over or whatever in some distant part of space-time, the waves kept coming and coming and coming. I think that's
there you have it. By the way, that movie where the lady judged herself was Mimi Rogers in The Rapture.
The Rapture.
You remember that movie?
I haven't seen it either, but I'll have to.
Oh, you've got to pick it up. Albert in Northern California, you're on with Paulino.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I have a kind of a question and comment for your guest. He said a little while ago that the early Christians did not believe in hell. And I want to know where he got that from, because I have statements right here from Ignatius of Antioch, Clement, and Irenaeus. Ignatius and Clement were contemporaries with the apostles. And Irenaeus was one generation after the apostle John. And they wrote epistles where they said that there's an everlasting hellfire. So I want to know where your guest got that idea that the early Christians did not believe in hell.
All right,
okay.
Paul.
Well, the people you mentioned are old friends of mine, okay? You have to understand that the term hell is not what it means today, okay? God is a consuming fire. I mean, somehow people just don't take seriously how hellish you can be to be separated from God. God was described as a consuming fire. If you hate God, if you separate yourself from God, you are in hell. It's not a literal place. What I'm saying is they didn't believe in a literal place of fire and brimstone. They believed in hell, but as a place of separation from God, self-imposed separation from God. Okay, you can't read this stuff in English and think it's what it says in Greek. You just
all right.
I don't want to get into a theological discussion here.
Right. Okay, Michael in Tucson, you're on with Paul.
All right. Hey, Art. Man, it's an incredible honor to be on your show. And,
happy to have you.
This particular one is really fascinating to me. I mean, Mr. Eno, I've been trying to like research things on my own, similar to what you're getting into. Especially along the lines of David Deutsch you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
With the his explanation of the multi-worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. My main question is, like he was saying, it's mainly a quantum level effect of photons. And I was just wondering, you seem to be implying like emotion has an effect, like that you can contact some entity from a different universe through some sort of heightened sense of emotion. So my question is do you have like a method, like another guy was talking about remote viewing, like would you say you have a way of potentially verifying other entities? And if so, what would you say, like what would be the purpose of all this? Like why would we even be subjected to this?
Well, again, I think it's a very gut-level phenomenon here. When it comes, I don't know if you're the parasites or what, but I don't deliberately try to contact these things, of course. I mean, there's enough of the influence going on around us all the time, I think, anyway. I think what's happening here is simply nature is taking its course. Every creature has to eat. And if these are, as I suspect, plasma-based life forms, something that even Carl Sagan, who was an astrobiologist, what used to be called exobiologist, speculated about, they have to eat. Everything has to eat. And I think that we are we can line up to be the hot lunch. At times, and I would go so far as to say that we are, as a species, at farmed by these things in every sense of the word. And my concern is making people aware of it, hopefully I'm correct, and telling them what to do about it. But as far as actually deliberately contacting people from other, I don't think you have to do, you're already there yourself, you're already in contact, taken to its conclusion, you are already these people. You are already, perhaps even your own guardian angel. This gets into a whole different area beyond what we've been talking about. But, I think it's an open system. The multiverse is an open system. It's not, the worlds are not closed to one another. Energy is exchanged. Awareness is present. And it's a matter of just being aware of you're in the woods.
Oh, by the way, your book, Turning Home, God, Ghosts, and Human Destiny, how long has that been out?
Since last fall, actually.
Since last fall. How's it doing?
It was on the bestseller list in March on Amazon, and it's getting there, getting there.
All right, good.
I'm getting reactions to it that are very, very strange. Some people don't understand a word of it. Other people say they have mystical experiences while reading it. I didn't mean it to go as far as that. But
well, again, it's a matter of doors that you open, and perhaps there are things in your book that open doors for people.
Well, perhaps. I don't know. I cover a lot of this stuff, and I get into a lot of different things that kind of, I hope, you know, connect the dots. And I just hope that people are helped by it somehow. And there are some cases in there. If people don't like the science, they can read the cases and maybe be entertained by them.
There you go, folks. And also, we've got links up to the websites. Take a look. Fernando in Little Elm, Texas, wherever that is, you're on with Paul.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Bell, and good morning, Mr. Eno.
Good morning.
Thank you. We are north of Dallas, about 70 miles.
Okay.
Mr. Bell, I have listened to you for a very long time. Not since your interview with Father Malachi Martin have I learned so much. You have been an instrument in learning and insight. And
I hope
really
so.
I appreciate everything you have done for me, in that I have learned a lot from your interviews and from you as well. I want to ask Mr. Eno, am I pronouncing his name correctly?
Yes, you are.
Okay. What does he think is the what is sin? I'm curious on his thoughts on what is sin.
Well, theologically, sin is missing the mark. In the Greek, is missing the mark. It's not being everything you can be. It is people generally it's interpreted as offending God. Well, I think God is offended when we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, when we're not being all we can be, not to sound like an Army commercial, but it literally means missing the mark. That's what it means. I mean, I don't know what else I can say. I think one of my problems with Christian theology is that I think we create sin in a way by setting up an atmosphere of making it attractive. I don't know if I'm expressing that properly, but I think that the whole guilt thing is not the way to prevent sin. I think the way to prevent sin is simply...
Paul, I think you know it when you do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, we're at the end of... Paul, I can't control...
The Father said...
Paul.
Yes.
Paul, I can't control the clock. I'm sorry. We're out of time, bud. It has been such a pleasure. I promise we will do it again.
That's always a pleasure.
Take care, my friend. It's been a good one. That's Paul Eno, folks. I'm sorry. We really are out of time so quickly. Good night.